Welcome to the Laura Mayer Podcast, a podcast all about learning to walk in the mental, emotional, and relational freedom that Jesus provided for you. Okay, you guys, y'all asked for it. Brian's back.
Hey.
back for his second ever podcast episode. Y'all really loved him the last time he was on. We got so much good feedback.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, that was kind of a scary thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Realizing that we, that, or feeling the pull from the Lord to share that. And I think the scary part for me was because I think sometimes when I hear somebody teach or share on a subject, I just automatically assume that they are experts in that area. And that's probably a fallacy. Probably all of us kind of do that. We're all still learning. We're all still, you know, working. We're all still growing. But I think you and I both know that we're not experts. We know a whole lot more than we knew.
Yeah, we're experts in how we were. Now we're learning how to be something different.
Okay, that's a good way to put that. Yeah. Yeah. And so, but it felt vital and it felt important to the Lord's heart that we share what we learned. And so last episode when he was on, I'll link that in the show notes. It's only a few episodes back though. I think it was like in April, where we talked about the emotional undercurrents in marriage and how oftentimes what you're arguing about is not really what you're arguing about and how to get to the root. And usually there's a lot of emotional content there that needs to be discussed. And a lot of couples just work on discussing. What were you going to say?
I was going to say it's emotional bruises.
Yeah. And but a lot of times couples just focus on the things on the surface, which is the facts. But not to reteach that episode. You can go back and you can listen to that. We'll put that in the show notes. But today, the episode is we're going to talk about men specifically and emotions and what you've learned the last couple of years as the Lord's really been doing a lot of healing in your life. You had to understand, like what you just said, being experts in the way you used to be. It is important. I saw a quote recently that, you know, there's a difference in, you know, looking back to your past versus fixating on your past. We're not supposed to fixate on the past where you stay stuck and you stay chained. But it is so helpful to look back at the past in an effort to understand how you got to where you are now, why you do relationships the way you do now, what things trigger you the way they do now, because it's information. And it separates it from just you feeling like, well, I just screw up. I'm just terrible at this. I'm just the worst. And it takes the shame out of I'm just awful. Instead goes, oh, I was educated wrongly about this. And so I got to learn a new way if I'm going to interact in a new way. Because doing relationships the way I've done them is not working. So so there's that. I did want to bring up this one point. You know, this podcast, when the Lord had me start this back in 2020, I knew I was supposed to teach freedom. And it's freedom in the soul. And I think a lot of times in churches, we overlook the soul. We kind of treat it like a lesser part of us, a lesser part of who we are, less important, less influential, less whatever.
But, can you explain the soul?
Yeah. Okay. So we are made up of three parts. God designed us in his unique, amazing designer's eye. He made us like him, where he's three parts, God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. He created us with to be a triune being. So we are a spirit. That is the core of who we are. That's the real us, the part of us that lives forever in eternity somewhere. And that's also the part of us that gets born again when we make Jesus our Lord and our Savior. But then he gave us the gift of a soul. Our soul is, you don't see it, but it's made up of our mind, so our thoughts, our will, which is our desires, our drive, our want to, and our emotions, so it's our feelings. God gave us that, and God only gives good gifts to his kids. And that's the part of us that we do relationships with. It's the part of us, it's like the transmission, it's the driver of our life.
And that's the part that really wants to connect.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, we live in a body. That's the shell. That's the part that came from dust. We'll return to dust. But we're supposed to care for it, and it's the vehicle that we drive through life in. So it's really important, and Scripture references how we are called to renew our mind. And right before that phrase about renewing our mind, it says, not thinking how the world thinks. So it's important. Let me actually find that Scripture reference. Okay, so that's actually in Romans 12:2, and it says, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of the mind. It's talking about the soul here. So we've got to give attention to how we think. We have to give attention to our soul if we're going to be able to renew that part of us. We don't renew that part of us by ignoring it. We don't renew that part of us by shaming it. So if that's been what the journey's been, is renewing how we think.
100%.
Yeah. So, Brian, will you just take it and explain kind of how you used to view emotions and men and emotions and real men with emotions and little boys that have emotions and what you believed about it, and then how that made you feel on the inside when you did have an emotion?
Okay, so I think the main, most simplest way I can explain it is guys were not supposed to have emotions. We were not supposed to feel. It was always a keep your emotions in line, never express those, never be able to even understand how you're feeling. With not being able to express our emotions, the feeling that we're not supposed to have them. So there's this underlying current that's underneath men, at least in, for myself, of I don't know exactly what this feeling is, but I'm either feeling frustrated or I'm feeling lonely or I'm feeling something else. At the time, I didn't really know what it was, but it was underlying and just kind of brewing underneath the surface. So then it would often just come out as anger. I would snap and just lash out for the most part because I didn't really know what was going on underneath the surface. So I was always walking around on like a 9, I guess, if you want to call a 9 out of 10. And it didn't take a whole lot because I kept just carrying this underlying heavy amount of emotions that I just kept trying to suppress.
Because that's the message culturally. And I don't know, maybe there's some people listening that that's not the culture you grew up in. We both grew up in the southeastern corner of the United States, in what is referred to as the Bible Belt, because there's a church on every corner. And so it's kind of a double whammy, not only culturally here in the United States of what real men are, strong, emotionless robots, but then it's the double whammy of the church culture that demonizes emotions. And that's been something that I've just been, gosh, preaching so hard lately is why should we demonize something that God gave us as a gift? It's just information. Emotions are information that you then use to do life.
And to question what is going on around you.
What's going on? Helps point. It's like signposts on the road, or like a lot of times we describe it as the little lights that come on the dashboard of your car to let you know it's time to change the oil, or, oh, you've lost tire pressure. Well, then you pull over on the side of the road and you check things, or you pull over into the shop and see what's going on underneath the hood so that you can go the distance. And so God gave us those. And so the double whammy of, I think it's very common, little boys in this area, if they express tears because they physically are hurting, or they're really disappointed in something, or they felt scared, or all these things they felt, for some reason, we have said that it is illegal for them to feel any of those feelings. It's almost like the only emotion that's legal for men, that's considered manly, is anger. Hmm. We let that one count. Who gets to decide what's bad and good? There's not bad or good emotions.
Yeah.
It's all information that's important.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is the thing that I'm learning more about is that young girls get the opportunity to feel and express and practice those emotions.
Yeah.
With each other, and then also with parents and friends and family, because they get more experience with it, because the whole term, oh, she's just being emotional.
Yeah. Even with girls, though, I have seen that be used as a negative. I know for myself, I am, the way that God has wired me with a whole lot of compassion in the way that I love people, with that comes, sometimes it feels like I feel everything. I feel in technicolor, highly empathetic person. And so sometimes that has been used as a weapon against me, that I'm just too emotional. I just feel too much. So then if I felt anything, it was, oh, this is a weak part of me. This is bad. And I'm beginning to see now that, no, this is good information. I have a highly tuned, information system. And, but you're right. I think it's more legal for girls, and it's more common, like if a little girl's crying, to see someone come up beside her, even if it's her dad, even if it's a guy or something, and say, you're pretty bummed out about that, aren't you? Or did they hurt your feelings? You know, you want to talk about that? Or I'm really sorry that your dog died. Or, you know, all the little things, the little girls receive response. The people are sensitive to how they're feeling, and then they respond to how they're feeling with love and support. Little boys, often, they're told, wipe them tears. Suck it up, buttercup.
Man up.
Man up. You can do this. Walk it off. Walk it off. Walk it off.
Control your emotions.
Control, control, control. Well, see, the problem is emotions aren't meant to be controlled in that type of a sense. They're meant to be listened to and to be held with curiosity. Because you and I both know that, like, if a little light comes on the dash of your car, well, you can handle that, and that's probably not going to be an expensive fix. But if you put duct tape over the front of your vehicle, and every light that comes on, you ignore, 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 which is really what men are doing when they say, I'm controlling, controlling, controlling. They're ignoring.
Yeah, because you said something earlier, and I don't want to put out there that I didn't feel the emotions, because I felt the emotions. I just didn't know what they were. The thing is, I wasn't able to, like, think about those or dive into what exactly is this feeling? What is this that I am actually feeling at this moment?
Right. And it's because you weren't given space to practice. Because yeah. As a child, you definitely grew up in that space, in that culture of you were maybe even mocked and ridiculed and made fun of by people that should have actually responded with support, love, connection, and helped you to discern what you were feeling and go, you know, I bet that, you know, you were being bullied at school. Oh, wow. It's normal to feel scared. It's normal to feel anger over that. It's normal. Let me support you in that. And then what do I need to do about it? Instead, it was you should be a man and get over it. You should be a man and get over it. You should be a man and get over it. Which is the same as saying you should just ignore it. And so then that brought in a lot of shame.
Yeah.
Because then every emotion you would feel.
Well, the other thing, too, is I would feel the emotion, but then the underlying thing of, oh, you shouldn't feel that way. So then I would have to override the feeling that I was actually feeling with, mm-hmm. No, I should be okay. I should be okay. I need to be okay. There's something wrong with my feeling indication lights.
Ah, something wrong with me. I'm broken.
Yes.
Something wrong with me and I'm broken. So then you stuff. And then young men go through life with collecting or I guess the buildup of everything that's ever happened and not been processed. And so then there's just a lot of shame, and it just comes out as anger. Talk about for a second. I think, you know, it's helped us to learn that anger is a secondary emotion. That you always feel something first, or there's something underneath. If you peel the curtain of anger back, there's something going on underneath.
Yeah, and I'll give an example, just a personal example here. I'm a dad. We all know children can be loud at certain times. They can just go about it. Children are loud, let's put it that way. So, example, have a kid with a recorder. You know, the little recorder things that make noise. That's pretty much all they do. One of my kids was playing the recorder, and of course, it doesn't sound very good because they're young. And it's just constantly going off and off and off and off. Well, I'm sitting over to the side trying to ignore that it is irritating for me because I'm having the thoughts of, oh, well, this shouldn't bother you. You should man up and just not let this bother you.
Even if it's been the end of a long day, you're tired, and you just need some peace and quiet, which there's nothing wrong with someone being self-aware enough to say, hey, honey, I know you're practicing your instrument right now, but I've had a really long day and I'm really just needing some quiet. Could you go do that in your room?
So really the thing that you just said about that was being self-aware. I was not self-aware of what was actually that first emotion that was going on inside of me. I know a while ago you said it was the second emotion, but it was the stuffing of the first emotion which led to that second emotion of the anger, that the outburst, because I would put down the irritation or the frustration part of it, of wanting some peace and quiet and just needing some relaxation, even if it's only 5 or 10 minutes. But sometimes it feels like I come into the house and it's a circus. As soon as I come in, everything's loud, there's overstimulation, and I just need a break, just 5 minutes sometimes even, to kind of reset, realize where I'm at, and let's move forward. But I would hear all of this going on in the background, and I thought I was a bad person because here my kid is trying to play, have fun, and I knew that that's what they should be doing and what they want to be doing. So the frustration came when I couldn't take it, when I couldn't man up, when I couldn't just ignore them. And I think if I did ignore them, then I was viewed as checking out, like I was not there anymore. And I think that's been a survival tactic for myself, is to just check out, which isn't good. And then that'll probably be another episode. But the first emotion was the frustration, the irritation, not feeling that I could really trust my own emotions.
Probably some overwhelm, too.
Oh, yeah, 100% overwhelm.
Just a lot going on. I mean, just to give the listeners some understanding, in case you don't know us in real life, we had 3 babies in 5 years, and now they are all teen and preteen age. So the noise is a different type now. The busyness of life is a different type. But goodness, those years that they were all baby, toddler, preschool, elementary, wowzers. Those can be intense.
Yeah, pretty much. So, and then that would just continue to build and build and build until I lost it. And I would lash out and have the wrong tone, be irritated. I mean, here I was looking forward to coming home and spending some time with the family.
Yeah.
But once I get in the environment, not being able to deal with the first primary emotions and the recognizing in myself what those were.
And the fact, too, that you weren't starting at a level one. I mean, you just said a few minutes ago that you walked around always feeling like you were at a level nine. And you guys, we have not always been able to talk this openly about this. I didn't know what was going on with him. I didn't know why. He came home every single night, and I didn't know, was Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde coming in? And if you don't know that reference, it's like, is this the nice guy coming in or the mean monster that's coming in? And so me and we have all girls, there was definitely a pulling away from him because you weren't a safe person. And this went on for years and years and years and years and years. And so, and because you were so trapped inside yourself, from years of stuffing, and then you've had some pretty traumatic things happen in your life. So this would be hard for somebody who's just trying to navigate normal life. But then you dump on top of that horrible life events happening. And I mean, I'm just thinking of who might be listening. You know, gosh, this extends all the way. Our men in society, you guys are often the front line of so many things. You know, I think about veterans coming home from war. And if a veteran has seen things that humans are not, our brains are not wired to be able to process. And you had to live it and you had to survive it. And then if you went to that war zone, having been raised in a culture that men shouldn't cry, men shouldn't feel anything, and there's something weak, wrong, and broken about you if you do, you're an explosive device waiting to explode everywhere you go, which just causes more for you to pour more shame on yourself and more shame on yourself and more shame on yourself. And we as women, because we did have time and it was encouraged for us to practice that a little more. And I know I'm speaking in general terms. Not every woman grows up in an environment like that. I know some very hard, walled-off women who also grew up in very emotionally unresponsive, insensitive environments, and even flat-out abusive environments. And they've had to, for survival, disconnect from that part of who they are just to continue on. And it causes people to put up a wall that the Lord heals. I see him healing it every day. So there's hope for you if that applies. But so we as women, oftentimes, I know I would, in our early years of marriage, you would come home, you were angry, you were stomping around because of my own upbringing and some survival patterns that I learned. I clicked into hyper-functioning, extra people-pleasing, you know, that trauma response of fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. I was so much a fawner, which is people-pleasing, codependency. And so I would click into this extra-pleasing you, try to be extra responsive to you, extra, what do you need, how can I help, what, how can we support kind of thing. And because you were raised in an environment where your emotional and mental and even at times physical needs weren't responded to. Well, I know we've talked it out before, like you had to wall off and disconnect and quit needing. Yeah. And so then when so connection felt unsafe because connections for you caused pain.
Yeah.
The people that you needed connection with, you needed responsiveness from, you needed safety from, were trying to survive their own stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And I want to interject that I think for the most part, most parents do the best they know.
Yeah, 100%.
And many of us were raised by parents who were still trying to heal or didn't even know how to heal, didn't even know where to begin. They may have been so disconnected from themselves, they're just in survival mode, and the kids get caught up in the undercurrent of it.
And it feels like this is my normal.
Yeah.
That's what it was for so long.
Yeah.
I didn't, like, know any better. So it's like, how can you, I won't say blame someone for not knowing, but it's true. Like, how, you, it's hard to hold anything against someone if they don't know any better, if they don't know that how to do life better.
Yeah. But then you can decide, hey, I'm going to learn more than they knew.
Correct.
And I'm going to pass on more knowledge to my kids than what I had passed on to me.
Yes.
So because connecting, okay, I feel like we're all over the place with some of this, but it's like because you learned somewhere along the line that being connected to someone emotionally caused intense amounts of pain, that your needs would not be met, that what was important to you would be mocked and made fun of.
Or ignored.
Or completely ignored. That we've learned since that anytime I tried to move in closer to you to connect emotionally, you perceived that as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And you would push away even harder, which activated my trauma
mm-hmm.
of always feeling like I could never be good enough to earn love. No matter how hard I worked, no matter how perfect I was, no matter... So there's that over-functioner that gets kicked in to where you start... I mean, you try to be wife of the year, mom of the year, all the things of the year, and it's still not enough to get a loving response from your husband, for him to care about your heart, for him to care about anything that's important to you. I mean, there were even seasons in our marriage where you just wouldn't even talk to me. Like, we lived like separate lives in the same house. Like, we couldn't even talk about anything going on with the kids or life or anything. You would come home and you'd go upstairs for hours and hours and hours and just completely disconnect.
Yeah.
Or never connect.
Yeah.
And what a lonely place that is. We were both so incredibly lonely.
Yeah.
You, in a way, for being in a prison of your own making.
Mm-hmm.
But because you didn't know how to get out of it. And then me, for pouring out everything I could to make this relationship thrive, reading every book I could get my hands on, doing all the things, all the advice that people were giving, and none of it working, and actually just making it worse. And so we both settled with the belief of there's just something wrong with us.
Yeah. And I think with me as well, it was a, there's something wrong with me, so how can she really love me? Because I feel like there's something broken.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is wrong with her that she would want to love me?
Because the thing with kids growing up, if your parents are unresponsive to your needs through abuse or neglect, or maybe through mental illness, or all the things that makes a parent not be able to fully participate in their kids' lives, kids never look at their parents and say, "What's so wrong with them that they can't see how great I am?" Kids always see their parents as someone who's perfect and whose opinion is right and correct. And so if they are not spending time with me, if they're always angry at me, if they're always belittling me, if they're always ignoring me, if they're always on their phone when I'm trying to talk to them about what's important to me, kids never say what's wrong with my parent. Kids always say what's wrong with me and truly believe in that there is something so flawed. And so, gosh, if you're listening, I feel like there's probably people nodding their head and going, "Oh my gosh, yes." It's where you just have this overwhelming belief about yourself that there's just something so wrong. And if anybody ever truly found out the real you and who you really were, they would hate you and walk away and never be your friend again if you were ever discovered. But yeah, you can't quite even put your finger on what is so wrong, but you just are so sure there's something is. Because in spite of all your efforts, in spite of either how demanding you tried to be to get your needs met and they still weren't, or in my case, in spite of how small I tried to be and not have any needs myself and only focus on the needs of others and of you, still wasn't enough. You're dealing with trauma.
Yeah.
If what I just said, you're like, "Yes, that's me." You are dealing with trauma.
So one thing that I learned was trauma can be an actual event that happened.
Mm-hmm.
A traumatic car wreck or something like that. Or it can also be a lack of something that happened.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is you had needs or something that went unmet.
Yeah.
And one of the main ones that I think about as far as society goes is the baby, let them cry it out.
Oh, I hate that.
So that was popular. Hopefully it's not still popular, but the whole let them cry it out. A baby doesn't know. They know they have a need for protection. They know that they have a need to feel connected. And here the parent is just letting them cry it out. That teaches that child subconsciously that my needs are not important. My needs can never be met. And so they give up.
And there's something wrong with me having needs. Yeah. So I want to make sure we're being clear, like, because since we're talking specifically about men and emotions, so if there are men listening who are in a marriage, in a relationship, where your significant other or your spouse is, she's always saying to you, I feel like you don't listen to me. I feel like you don't care about me. I feel you never spend enough time with me. I feel. And she's saying all these feel words and you have no idea what in the world she's even talking about, because you're going to work, or you're changing the oil, or you're doing all of these tasks. And you're doing all these tasks to try to communicate something to her. Because as a child, you were never given permission to understand emotional connection. Because you can never connect emotionally if you don't even know what's going on inside of you emotionally, much less be able to connect to another human over them. And then she is trying to explain to you that she feels no or little emotional connection with you. That you guys don't share your thoughts. You don't share your feelings. You don't open up and tell her about what's bothering you. You don't communicate with her about how you feel. That's when a woman feels connected to you, is when you're sharing in those emotional moments. And all you can do is answer back with, well, I changed the oil.
So with that, there were many times that I came home over the first beginning of our marriage where I was scared. I was owning a business. And I was scared that I wouldn't have the revenue that I needed to make that monthly payment. But I, like I said, in my past, learned to stuff that. And I would come home irritated or frustrated because here I have been. I've been at work all day and I've had no income, no revenue. Being self-employed, those days are the worst. You're like, you question yourself, like, why am I even doing this? But I had that coming home with me. But I didn't know what that was, that scaredness, that disappointment even, that I had a disappointing day. And instead of me being able to come home and say, hey, I had a really bad day. I didn't have any customers today and I didn't sell anything, so I had no revenue. Instead, if I would have been able to come home and say that, I probably would have been met with a, it's okay. We go through those cycles. Well, it'll be fine, and we're going to go with it. But I felt like I had to carry all that weight by myself.
Because any time in your past when you did share emotions, it wasn't safe.
Yeah.
And so I know there were many times in our marriage I would say to you, why do you treat me like the enemy? I am on your team. And it would be when I was trying to push in closer and say, what have I ever done to make you feel like you can't trust me? Why do you wall me off? Why do you shut me out? Why are you angry at me all the time? What have I done? And I remember even at different times saying, why did you marry me? You don't like me.
Which was not the case.
And so you would hear that and you would shut down more. And I'm like, see, you're running away from me. Like, what in the world? But inside of you, you were locked in this wall in this room. Connection wasn't safe. I got to practice relationships growing up, friendships and emotions and stuff. So I had the tools to then do marriage in that sense of being able to connect on those kinds of ways. And with young boys, we shame them, don't let them express how they're feeling, help them process through it, help them do these in a healthy way. But then we say, oh, go be a great husband. Go be a great father. No wonder suicide rates are sky high in men. No wonder depression rates are sky high in men. Oftentimes, anger in men is actually depression.
And no wonder addiction.
Addiction. Men and addiction. Incarceration rates. No wonder. Because we have made men be fragmented from themselves. We've fragmented out their spirit, soul, body. We've told them that a part of them is weak. A part of them must be dominated. A part of them must be overcome. Without first explaining how their engine even works under their hood. And why those indicator lights come up, and it's information to help you navigate and do life, just like signs on a road. You read them. And yeah, I mean, there is a level of, you might feel like, you know, punching somebody today, and you apply self-control to that, and you don't. Or, hey, I don't feel like going to work today. Well, no, that's when you say, you know, I am tired. But even in that, acknowledge the emotion in it. Yes, I am tired. Yes, I'm weary. Maybe take that emotion, talk to your spouse about it, talk to somebody about it. If you're tired all the time and hate going into work all the time, there may be emotions in you that are trying to give you information that you're in the wrong field, that you're in a toxic work environment, that it's time for you to move or to apply for that promotion, that it's time for you to change industries. It's good information that's coming to you, but if you only ever go, there's something wrong with me.
Well, with that,
there's no growth.
Too, with the job part of it, it could be an underlying emotion of not feeling appreciated. Because guys want to feel appreciated, that their work, their effort, their determination is appreciated and a vital part of the family. So no matter which job you're in, you're not going to love it if you don't feel appreciated in it. And that is either in the work environment or at home. You can have the best paying job, but come home and feel dumped on and not appreciated. And you're like, well, it must be the job. Maybe I want to change jobs. And there's a cycle that goes on with that.
Yeah. Wow, that makes a lot of sense. A whole lot of sense. So, I guess to kind of wrap up, I wanted to share, I feel like we've been all over the place, but I think we've gotten some good nuggets out. This definitely did not go as linear as we had discussed before we hit record. We were like, we're going to discuss this first and then this. And it's just been kind of all over the place. But hey, I think it's going to be good. So one of our listeners actually wrote in. And I got permission, but I wanted to just read their comment. And I'm going to paraphrase it. This listener, she had just listened to the podcast you and I did back in April. And it really helped a lot. And she said, everything you talked about really hit home. My husband can't decipher what emotions he's feeling, and I know and feel all the emotions. My husband was raised not to show any emotion and definitely not to cry. Men would not have tear ducts if they were not supposed to cry. I would just love to iterate that. He has been through some extremely traumatic things in his life. And she understands that he has a right to feel how he feels. However, he doesn't even realize what is happening, nor can he even decipher how or what he's feeling. Just like Brian, it comes out as anger. So in our marriage, I've turned into a person who just lets absolutely everything go, and I just don't say anything about anything, because even the smallest thing turns into something huge. I am by no means perfect and grew up in a divorced family, and we also weren't encouraged to discuss our emotions. My husband doesn't see any issues. So, do you have any recommendation on how I can approach this?
Well, first off, one of the things that just stood out, because you've read that question to me a couple of times, one of the things that just stood out to me is she says that she thinks he has the right to feel the way that he feels, but he doesn't feel like he has the right to feel like he has, or how he does. She sees his feelings. He doesn't. I didn't feel like I had the right to my own feelings, because they were always judged wrong. That no, I shouldn't feel that way. Even though I was feeling disgust, anger, usually the negative emotions, because nobody really tells you, no, you shouldn't feel happy. They always encourage you, go feel happy, be happy.
Smile more. Yeah.
Yeah, smile more, which is very frustrating if you've got something going on that you don't even feel safe enough to tell someone.
Yeah.
But I felt like I didn't have the right to feel the way I was feeling.
Wow. Okay, so what would you say to a man. Well, even to this husband. We don't even know his name. I wouldn't say the name even if we did have it in here. The difference in you, inside of yourself, and the effect it's had on your relationships with your wife, your extended family, your children, all the things. When you used to believe you had no right to feel anything and you were busy trying to man up and your relationships were going down in flames. Mm-hmm. Versus how you feel now and how you treat yourself now when you have an emotion.
Okay, so one of the things that was pretty beneficial for me, I know in the last episode we talked about the crayon box and all the different emotions. Women have multiple thousands of crayon colors, and men usually have six, and they're the basic ones.
Happy, sad, angry.
Yeah. So I would suggest that a man actually go ahead and print out a couple different emotional, I think they're emotional wheels or like a color wheel.
You can Google, emotion wheel. Print that thing off. It's going to feel so elementary. But has it been a game changer for us?
Yes.
Have we gone from, we won't even go there.
Well, and the reason I suggest that is because a lot of the times I could look at that and be like, well, I'm really feeling discouraged instead of angry.
And it helped you understand yourself.
Yes, it did help me understand myself. Being able to recognize different emotions than just the six that I thought everyone had, and that's all everyone had. Being able to go into those outer emotion parts of that wheel to see. I would feel the first emotion as one of the outer rings, but since I was not aware of what that actually was, then it would just relate down to the inner six. I would move that mentally without, subconsciously, just move those down. So if I'm feeling discouraged, then I was feeling sad. If I was feeling lonely, then it would go to one of the inner parts of it instead of knowing and being able to differentiate
the different layers.
The different layers. That was a game changer for me.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing that my emotions are correct for me.
Mm.
And just because someone else might not have that same emotion in this example, that it still didn't mean that mine wasn't true.
Yeah.
My emotions are for me.
Yep.
And it's okay to have those.
It's information for you.
Yes.
Because you're a separate vehicle than I am.
Yep.
And I know you've told me before that you used to walk around feeling like you were on a nine, feeling, I think the phrase you have used with me was feeling like your brain was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Super irritable, like living with a hornet. And now that you are not busy suppressing everything, but we talk stuff out, you have a therapist, I have a therapist. You've been educating yourself. You've been listening to podcasts. You've been learning about you, learning about your car.
Yeah.
Learning about this car that God blessed you with.
Yeah.
Now, stuff, you don't get mad if somebody spills milk and go into a screaming tirade and make us all afraid of you and we avoid you the rest of the day because you hurt us.
And I want to get rid of some of the stigma and the tabooness of men being able to talk about their emotions.
You're not any less manly now. I mean, like, for those of you that don't know Brian, I don't know, like, you are, I don't know. I feel like I'm going to say this is going to sound so stupid and all the men are going to roll their eyes because I'm such a dork. But, like, you're a manly man. You're a dude. You're like, you love sports. You love football. There is not, I mean, even to this day, like anything athletic, you can still pick, I mean, you're 41 years old. You can still pick up that football and do just, I don't know if you can still do just what you did in high school, but.
Just tell me I can.
Just say, okay. But like, you can take apart vehicles and put them back together and like, you can build fires and chainsaw things down and like, you're like a manly dude. And the having a house full of females, they just, it's funny how the girls just all brag on your muscles and all this stuff. So you learning to understand your emotions has not
taken my man card.
Nope, not a bit. Not a bit. And actually, I would even say that because now there's a part of you that has been unlocked, the relational connection part of you, you've upped your game.
All men want to hear that.
Because now you can now relate to me. Yeah. And you can connect with me. And you can connect to your daughters. And now, way more times than not, you're the hero of the moment. Instead of being the villain of the moment because you came through like a bull in a china shop not caring anything about us and about, like, about what our heart would feel and how this, you know, all these things, the relational side of things. Now you do. So now it's like, oh, Dad's the best. And then now I find myself looking at you and being so proud of you and feeling connected emotionally to you. And that translates into all areas of our relationship. So the thing that you were so afraid of and the thing that so many men are afraid of, it's like the tiger inside that you don't know how to handle it, so you just keep it stuffed down. And it's going to feel so scary when you first start letting yourself feel.
Oh, super, super scary.
You're going to think that you're going to lose control. But you've already lost control.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the things that was the major factor of setting me free was realizing that I could not do it. I had tried my hardest over 40 years to try to do it my way, to try to be in control, to try to have enough self-control, but it was self-control and stuffing which made me lose control.
Yeah. All right, I want to get to the rest of her question. This is kind of a longer podcast than we intended it to be, but I don't want to just halfway answer. So when it says how should I approach my husband with this information? So what I'm hearing this woman say, she's probably feeling very lonely. She's probably feeling very isolated. She is craving a deeper emotional connection with her husband. And maybe let's take the word emotional out of it because maybe the guys are rolling their eyes. She wants to feel one with you. She wants to feel connected with you. She wants to feel like you are her person, that you are her partner in life. And you can't be a partner with someone if you don't share your life with them or if they're always having to protect themselves from you because you're not emotionally safe because they don't ever know when you're going to be set off. And then you shame yourself because you can feel her pulling away. Or maybe you can't even, probably you can't even verbalize that you're feeling her pull away. You just think she's mad. Mm-hmm. And really, she may be pulling in for safety. So I want to tell her feelings are valid too.
Yeah.
And a lot of times women settle for so much. They thought they're so connected with this person when they started dating and got married. And then the deeper and deeper and deeper into relationship and kids and career changes and life happening, it's almost like men draw into their cave. And women are like, where'd you go? I thought I was in a relationship with somebody. And it's because it's requiring more and more and more of them, which requires more self-awareness of them. You can't be self-aware if you don't have any emotional awareness. I mean, it would be great. Like, Google emotional IQ. Start learning as much as you can about how to raise your emotional IQ. It is statistically proven you are going to be more successful in your marriage, in your workplace, everywhere, the higher in your emotional IQ that you go. And it's just your ability to understand your own emotions and understand those of others. So she's feeling pretty lost and desperate too. Something else we learned that was so helpful is that when a woman comes to her husband with what he may hear as a complaint and a list of, see, I'm not doing that right either, because men are so competency-based. They want to know that they are doing something well. And so when she comes to you with, hey, I'm feeling disconnected, I feel like you never pay attention to me, all these things, is actually her cry of help, and it's her actually giving you a compliment and saying, I believe you have what it takes to fix this, or I wouldn't be coming to you to begin with. And that's why it's so true that when women quit coming to their husbands about stuff, it's because they gave up. So if she is still talking to you about what's bothering her, if she's still saying, hey, we got to sit down and talk, and that light lits or activates fear in you, it actually is her still saying, I believe you have what it takes. Join with me in working through this. Let me be a part of your team. Let your wall down. And then women, and we may just do a whole nother episode on how to respond because we didn't get to that in this one.
Yeah.
When he lets his wall down and says, I'm feeling scared, or saying, I'm feeling some kind of way and I can't quite figure it out, you need to be a safe place for him to say those words. Do not go running to your mama and telling all his business. Don't say, well, you shouldn't feel that way, or that's dumb. He just trusted you with his heart.
Yeah, and that's something that I wanted to be able to touch on is for a lot of years, I didn't feel safe to tell you if I was feeling frustrated or even angry, like I didn't feel safe to be able to voice that because I thought my past experience was going to be true for that present time.
Yeah.
Meaning I was going to tell you how I was feeling and then you were going to dismiss it, make fun of it, or tell me I shouldn't feel that way.
Yeah. Because either one, that is how other people in your life have treated your emotions when you would share things with them. Or at times that I had done that.
Mm-hmm.
Times that I met your emotions with just questions of, well, why do you feel that way? Because people that have any type of trauma in their background are going to respond in what might be considered abnormal ways to things. Like overreact. And you were, to use that term, an overreactor to all the things. But it's because you lived on a level 9 in this protect mode that everything around you was unsafe. Attack before you're attacked. Don't trust anyone or anything around you. And that's protection, that self-protection that you had to develop to make it how far you made it. So then even if I had a question of, well, why did you react that way about this? Because you were so wounded, you would even hear a question as she's dismissing me or she says my emotion's not valid. Or then just times that I didn't answer good at all and I did think it was stupid or I did. And so I've learned to also sit in that space and go, okay, I don't, in telling myself, I may not understand why he feels this way, but this is how he feels, and to empathize by just saying, I hear you saying that you feel really disrespected when I said that. I'm so sorry. I don't want you to feel disrespected. I do respect you a whole lot. It was never my intention to make you feel that way. And then you may have space. Sometimes it's best just to leave it there and let you hear that I heard you.
Yeah.
And that your feelings mattered and that I value. And then sometimes it's helpful for me to then have a redo and say, what I was trying to convey was this.
Yeah, I think to answer some of the questions on this particular answer or this of this question would be to start out slow.
Okay.
And just listen. Don't try to fix.
Yeah.
Don't try to fix. Listen, because if he's new at this, he might not really know exactly how he's feeling.
Which feels terrible to a man who's competency-based.
And then a woman is like, well, what do you mean you don't know how you feel?
Yeah.
And they jump on, well, tell me exactly how you feel.
You're demanding.
And expand upon that. And the man is like, I got 6 crayons. Which one do you want me to give you?
It's a growth. But you guys can work together. And I think it's pretty powerful, too, for us women to know that it's not, to not take it personal. I'm not saying stop. I'm not saying stop the growth of your marriage or settle. No, don't settle. But to give it patience and know that they, if you have a man who is willing to start learning this, you are ahead of 95% of the women out there is what it seems like. Those are my own statistics. Those are not factual. But to grow together, you're going to learn a whole lot about yourself, and you're going to learn that you didn't know everything you thought you knew. And just to make space for what's true to them, even if that's not true to you, and you don't have to let go of what's true to you. But it can become a beautiful partnership of two people who quit trying to make each other like them and instead celebrate who the other one is and how they're different and how now you've got more bases covered. Now you're stronger. So I think that's enough for today.
Probably so.
Yeah, that went a lot longer. But
thank you guys for listening.
Thanks, and thank you to the one who wrote in a question. If anybody has questions they want us to cover, we're gonna be doing some more of these in the future. So definitely write in, let us know how this helped you, and if you have a question you would like for us to answer. Until next time, thank you for joining us here for the Laura Mayer Podcast. Join us here again, where we will continue learning that being His means being free.